So that's how we knew that this was the house. So now they get back again to the goats. Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, the Hechem Havolo Yizim, where did Rabbi Chanina Mendoza get goats? I mean, people sometimes, you know, you talk about getting somebody's goat, but in this case, we'll see whose goat he got. Okay. So they want to know, how did he get goats? The Ho'oni Havet. He was poor. Remember we said how poor he was last week? That all that he could have from one week to the next, from one Shabbos to the next, was, like a bushel of carrots. That's it, right? And that was it. And the whole world derived its sustenance because of his merit. And he himself was so poor that he didn't have anything. And then, of course, we read, about how his wife said, let's get a little something. So, the business with the leg of the golden leg, remember, of the table, and then they decided to give it back to the Beit HaShalayim because they don't want to lose their table in Olam Haba and so on. Okay, so they want to know, where did he get these goats from, since he was poor? Not only that, the yod, in addition, Omer Chachamim, we have a statement that our sages said that Ein Megadlim Behema Dakar Beretz Yisrael, that you're not allowed to raise small cattle, meaning goats and sheep, in Eretz Yisrael.
Not allowed to raise?
Not allowed to.
Don't they have shepherds in Israel?
Sure they do.
So they're raising sheep?
Well, they're doing it on a commercial basis. Okay. But what was the reason for the prohibition? See, you find in several places in the Gemara. Okay. You have it in Baba Kama, you have it in other places. Although the Zohar, you have it. Basic reason is because they damage the soil.
Sheep food,
right.
Goats.
Goats, yeah. Right. I mean, they were eating up all the grass, and Eretz Yisrael needed that grass cover in order to
eat down to the roots. They eat the roots and all.
Right. Yeah. So that's the reason why they made a prohibition against doing it. Okay.
Sheep food.
I mean, it was the rabbis who made the prohibition. No prohibition like this in the days of the Bible. In the days of the Bible, we know that our patriarchs, they had flocks of sheep and goats.
Moses
and everything else,
sheep.
Right?
Yeah.
But in the days of our sages, in other words, 2,000 years later, then they became a pest, they became a nuisance in Eretz Israel. And that's the reason why they made a prohibition.
Jewish ecology.
So, how could he even have it? After all, he lived in Eretz Israel, so how could he defy, a statement of the Chachamim? So, Rav Pinchas said, well, this is how they came to him. Masa, the story told about the Ovar Odom Echor al Pesach Peso, a certain person happened to pass by Rabbi Chanina Mendoza's house, and he left there chickens.
Is that roosters or chickens?
Chickens. Tarnigolim means chickens over here.
Yeah,
chickens. Male, female, big as aunt, okay. But they're chickens. Yeah. Okay.
That's a tarnigale from roosters.
Right. We'll let the chickens figure out.
Tarnigolim is chicken. What's off?
Off means fowl in general, but it could also mean chicken. But the original meaning of the word off is really bird or fowl or something like that, okay? So in other words, Tarnigol is specifically chickens, hens, whatever you want it to call, okay? But Ophos could apply not only to them, it could apply to dogs, it could apply to what else do we eat?
Geese. Oh, what we eat.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
Geese.
What's permissible for us, okay?
Yeah.
Or, in general, it means, for example, Of HaShemayim is anything that flies in the heaven, okay?
Eagle, yeah.
Yeah.
Indicus is turkeys, aren't they?
Right, indic. Indic, right.
Indicus. Is that a Hebrew word?
Indic.
What is the word? A Yiddish?
It's Yiddish.
Yiddish.
It's really based upon an idea that's probably from Russian or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But I'll explain to you. The reason why they called it indics is that this is the kind of a fowl that came from India, according to the popular reports. That's what they indic, okay? So this is the reason why when they wanted to invent a word for turkey in modern Hebrew,
indic.
So it became Tarnigol Hodu. In other words, the chicken that comes from India, okay? Or the fowl from India. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Now you'll say, why India? Probably because of the pilgrims, you know, the story, you know, that they met him. After all, they were Indians, no?
Right.
In North America. In other words, it's not necessarily India of India, but India of North America that gave rise to the turkeys, okay? But anyway, that's how you have the word Indica.
But was turkeys considered a Jewish fowl? Not much, was it?
The answer is, at the beginning, there was suspicion as to whether it's kosher or not.
I see.
Yeah. But eventually, you decide it's kosher.
Kosher.
Today, I don't have to tell you, not only are we eating it, but Israel, too. Israel uses a lot of turkey. So turkey could be a very versatile bird. I mean, I've seen turkey made into, it looks like ground meat and things like that, you know, that they could really spice it up, doctor it up and everything else so that it tastes very good. I've seen pieces of turkey where it makes them look sort of like short ribs and things like that. It's interesting what they can do with it. Yeah. My son-in-law Yossi for Pesach, he uses a great deal of it.
Turkey, yeah.
Right? But you know, the cook knows how to make it up in different forms.
But they raise turkeys a lot in Israel, do they? They raise a lot.
Yeah, they raise them, right? Yeah. I mean, it's become a very popular bird now. Yeah.
Okay.
So the question is: so where did Rabbi Hanina Mendoza get these chickens? So he says, a certain guy once upon time passed by one day his house and he left chickens over there. So what happened? Mitzosan Ishtoi, so Mitzosan Ishtoi shall Rabbi Hanina Mendoza, and Rabbi Hanina Mendoza's wife found these chickens wandering around over there in front of the house. So you have to realize, what is the din in the Torah if you find something that belongs to somebody else? Can you claim it or not?
Of
course you can. Okay, right. Unless it's something which absolutely cannot be identified in any way. Okay? But barring that, then the mitzvah is that you have to take it and keep watch over it, right? Until such time that the claimant will come. And then after you've, you know, found out whether the claimant can really identify what it is, then of course you return it there. This is a mitzvah. Okay? So, when she brought these chickens to the house, so the Omar law, so Rabbi Hanina Mendoza said to his wife, he said to her, Al tochni mibeit zehen, do not eat of their eggs. Right, don't eat their eggs, because, you know, they don't belong to us. Okay? So, what happened because they didn't eat the eggs? So, the Hebrew beits them atad agoylem. As a result, the chickens laid more eggs, and you know, they hatched new chicks. Okay. The Hayim and Sarno son, and these chickens began to bug Rabbi Hanina and Mrs. Hanina. Okay.
Bugging. What's the Hebrew word for
bugging? Bother them. Tsar. You know what tsar is?
Tsar. Yeah.
Tsar. Yeah. Pain.
I just
right. Sorrow. You know. Torment. Whatever you want to say. So the verb. Tsar.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
You know. The torment. The bother
tsar,
them.
Plenty of tsar. Okay. Yeah.
So what happened? So Mechoron. So they sold the chickens. The Konabit Nahem Izim, and they bought with the money from the sale of the chickens, they bought goats. Now, in other words, not for their own personal use, but the point being that this way, you know, when the original claimant would come back, so they could give him the equivalent in money, you know, of what he had left. Okay? In other words, this is permissible. If you find something that's been around a long time and you have no control, it's becoming too much of a nuisance. Nobody says that you have to be tormented by what you're doing in the performance of the mitzvah. You understand? So you can exchange it for something else, but you know, the equivalent value has to, you know, it still belongs to the person who
lost
the
object.
You
have to give back not only the original chickens, but the money that for the chickens that were hatched out. Is that right?
If he came. Yeah, if he came soon enough, right, he would be entitled. The Gemara, you know, they have different things. The truth of the matter is that if a person is a shomer, as we would say, in other words, he has this responsibility of watching over an aveda, you know, something that has been lost, then if it's livestock or something like that, you know, where he has to supply food and so on and so forth, he is entitled, you know, for the expenses that he personally incurred in order to keep it. Okay. So maybe we could have argued that the chickens, you know, that that what the original chickens had hatched and so on, that that might have been used by Rabbi Hanina Mendoza. But he didn't want to touch it, you know. He was extremely scrupulous in whatever he did, and he felt he had no right to it. And so therefore he didn't want to touch it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, Pamachas, once, that same person, you know, who had lost the chickens, came by. The Omar Lachaviro, and he said to his friend, he says, "Hey, Bechan Hinachti Atanigolim Chali, this is where I left my chickens. Last time I saw them, this is where I left them." Shoma Rabbi Hanina, so Rabbi Hanina heard it, and Omar, and he said to him, Omar Lo, said to him, "Yesh Lecho Behen Simon, do you have some sort of a sign, you know, some kind of proof?"
Yeah.
Right, identification, you know. Omar Lo, Hain, so he said to him, "Yes." And also no Simon, he gave him a sign, you know, whereby he could recognize, you know, that these were talk of the chickens that he had left behind.
Yeah, his brand on.
So, since he couldn't get the chickens were no longer there, so for no taller reason, he took the goats, right? So he says, "V'hein hein, izu da isu dubi b'kanai." So these are the very same goats that had brought, bears on their horns. So now we know the origin. It wasn't that he bought it, but, you know, he was performing a mitzvah of keeping it for another person.
He gave him the goats and the chickens.
Well, the chickens he had sold, it says. He bought goats with the from the sale of the chicken.
Yeah, but he had the original chickens that laid the eggs.
No, he sold those too.
Right.
Oh, I see.
He sold them all. Right.
I see. Yeah. They were bugging him. I forgot. Yeah.
Right. It's
sorry. Yeah.
Right. Of course. Okay. Now we have a story about another person. We're finished with Hanina Mendoza's stories. All right. Now we're Rabbi Elozer ben Pedos. Rabbi Elozer ben Pedos, it says, the Chikalei Milza, Tuva. Things were going very, very bad for him, and as Rashi explains, it means, you know, that he was very, very poor. Okay? Below Havalei Midei Lemita. And he didn't have anything at all to taste. In other words, he had no food, whatever, in the house. So, what happened? Shokal Bora de Suma. Yes.
Could you go back to the beginning of that? I think you may have missed a couple of words.
All right. Rabbi Elozer ben Bedos, right? The Chikale Milza, which means things were very tough. Tuva, very, very tough. Okay? Mm-hmm. Things were very tough for him. Ovad Milza, right? Right? So, yes, Ovad Milza. I'm sorry, I got that was the words. Okay. Ovad Milza means over here that he was sick and he required to have his blood let, you know, he went to Baki's dump, in other words, the person to Malich, okay. So you still bonkers for him, okay.
Yeah.
Alright, so he went and he died, okay, and he didn't have anything to eat because after letting blood he needed food. I mean, just like, for example, you saw over here when they gave blood the other day to the Red Cross, people need a juice or whatever it may be, you know, in order to feel a little better. Right, okay? So, what did he do? Shokal Bora de Suma. He took a piece of garlic or a clove of garlic, if you wish, the Shadye Befume, and he put it into his mouth, Cholash Libe, and he fainted away. Vinim. And in his faint, he had a dream. Azul Rabbonin Lishiyulei Bey. So the rabbis came, you know, they heard that he wasn't feeling good, so they came in order to find out how he is. Nechaz Yuhu, and they saw the Kol Bochi V'Chayech, that in the midst of his sleep, he was weeping, and he was laughing. Not only that, but they saw that there was like a ray of light coming up from his forehead. So Ki Isar, when he woke up, Omulei, they said to him, "My Tama Kobochis V'chiyach, tell me, why did you weep and why did you laugh?" So Amalahu, he said to them, "The Haba Yosef Imi HaKodesh Baruch Hu. I dreamt that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam was sitting together with me. The Omulei, and I said to him, Ad Mosa Yetzor Bahayamo, tell me, how much longer do I have to continue to have tzoras in this world? The Omali, so he said to me, Elozor Bini, my son Elozor, he says, Nicha Lecho, the Abche Leyoma Bereisha, do you want me to turn the whole world back again to the beginning of Bereishas, the beginning of creation? Efshod bin Salad Bishat of the Mizaynim, maybe this time you'll be reborn in a time when there'll be enough food to be eaten. In other words, the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, I mean, you're complaining of me that your mazel when you were born wasn't so good. Right. You would like to be reborn, we'll have a better mazel, we'll have more food. So,
his world or their world?
Huh?
His world or their world?
It could be either. Could be either. But obviously, as we'll see, I mean, particularly the emphasis is upon his world. I mean, if he recreated the world for him, you understand? So maybe in this recreation, he'll have new mazel. The mazel being that he'll have enough food to eat.
Wait,
that
is skin of a cow.
Pardon me?
Oh, this said the skin of a cow. You said full of a cow. I don't know.
No, okay. I'm going to argue. Skin, no. I don't know where he got the skin from. Clove of garlic, I can understand, but skin of garlic, basically.
It doesn't change anything.
All right. Okay. So, anyway, Amri li kamei. So I said to him, that is, you know, Loza says, you know, in my dream, I said to the Rebbeinu Shalom, and says, Kulei hai, the Efshah. You prepared to do all this? Is it possible? So Abu Lay, so I said to him, the Chayai Tvei or the Chiyana? Am I going to live more, or have I already lived most of my life? This is what the question is. This is the way Rashi understands it, okay? In other words, do I have many more years ahead of me yet, or have I, you know, have I been allotted the major part of my life already, so that I don't have too many more years to go? So Omar Lee, so he said to me, the Chayis. In other words, you have already lived the major part of your life. So Amri Lekamei, so I said to him, Im came Lebeinu. So if that's the case, I don't want you to do what? Well, either it means I don't want you to rearrange creation for my sake, or it means that I don't want, you know, that I don't need, you know, any more food or anything like that. I don't have to have, you know, I'll get by the way it is, okay? So Amali, so he said to me, Bahai Agro da Amit Lebeino, as a reward, because you said, I don't need it or I don't want it anymore. So Yahibni Loch Le Alma de Osi, Tlesen Arbasa de Mishcha Afasimon Dachim. Says, I'll give to you in the world to come 13 rivers of Afarsamon oil, pure Afarsamon oil. Mishcho is oil, Afarsamon is, you know, Afarsamon is a very high quality, highly scented oil, right? And Dachya means, you know, pure. I'll give you, you know, 13 rivers, right?
Does that make sense?
Pardon me?
Is this a balsam oil?
Balsam?
Oh, design balsam oil. Okay, it doesn't matter. I mean, that's, as I say, it's a very soothing type of an oil. Okay? Yeah. Some words are better to lift. Leave it the way it is. Okay. As Puri says, Kifros Vidiglas. These, I don't know whether really the pure really goes on the oil. Okay. But, he says 13 rivers, right? Narvoso. He says like the Euphrates, right? And like the Tigris, okay? Huh? Yeah, today Iraq. Right. Yeah, in those days, I mean, yes, he had Babylonia and.
He didn't give it to them.
Right.
He gave it to the Arabs.
No,
the world to come.
Yeah, the world
right,
to come.
Yeah, they're the ones who got the oil, right? Unfortunately. No, all I can say is they're getting it this world, but we'll get it in the world to come. Okay?
Because Moshe Rabbeinu took the wrong turn.
Right. They didn't cross the Hudson, right?
Nope.
Okay. So, not only that.
That's the reason, because the two of them put something in there. Abraham gave the gifts to the Aaron. All he has said, he always gave gifts, but he never gave the gifts. He never gave less. You've got to keep getting gifts, because Abraham requested the gifts all the time.
No.
No.
And sent them out around the world.
I don't know, you're referring, of course, to the fact, you know, the children of the concubines, it says, that he gave them matonis, okay. But it doesn't mean that he has to keep on giving them matonis all the time.
That's what happens.
Yeah, right. The ma'angat behu, that you'll rejoice, you'll have, you'll make you feel very good. Okay, these rivers, you know, they have all this beautiful perfumed oil all over you, will make you feel good. All right. So, amalei kameh. So I said to him, "Hi, Vesulo, this is my reward and nothing more."
Oh boy.
So Omali, so he said to me, "Kavroch mayahivda, look, if I give you, then what will I give to somebody else? To your chaver, literally, in other words, to another person, what will I give?" So Amalei, so I said to him, "Va'ano negavra de lesbe be'ina. I'll settle, he says, for, you know, the share, let's say, of somebody who doesn't deserve it in the Olam Haba, okay? In other words, theoretically, everybody should get a chelik in the Olam Haba, okay? But some people, you know, don't deserve a very big chelik in the Olam Haba, so that therefore, what happens to, you know, the share that's left over? So he says, I'll settle for that. So what happened at this point? So Machim Bas Kutla Apusa. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave him, he hit him, you know, by snapping his fingers on his brow.
Yeah. It doesn't say that here.
I don't care what it says.
Philip.
So it's not Philip.
Philip.
Pardon me?
How did this take place?
That's what he did. Right,
Knibble.
Like this. I knipe. That is a knipe, not to be confused with a knipple.
I meant the
knipple. A knipple is something that women used to have a bundle of money that they
underneath,
hid.
Underneath,
yeah. That's right. I meant
the
knipe.
Right.
I confused.
Yeah. Remember, women in Europe, you know, they used to have a knipple because, you know, there's a little extra change that they would put it away to save for the rainy day.
They
so.
Yeah.
Right. The Yomali, and he said to me, Eloza Bri, says, "Oh, Eloza, my child," he says, "Giri b'cho giri, how do you like these arrows that I'm shooting at you?" All right. Needless to say, it's not altogether clear, this story, but we'll take a look a little bit at the Rashi over here, okay? Yeah, that's the end of the story for the moment.
You want more of this?
You want more? All right, so I'll explain to you how Rashi explains, you know, what happened.
Let's hear what happened.
Okay.
Let's hear what Rashi has.
All right. The Rashi starts with Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, okay? You see it over there? All right, first of all, on the side, you'll see it says Chazya, Ayin Rashi, and so on and so forth. Leo, it's absurd, etc., okay? This has nothing to do with us. But start roughly about a little 10 after, about 10 lines down in the Rashi. 3, 6, 9, excuse me, let's say about 12 lines.
Yeah.
All right, so it's Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. No, I'm sorry. See, this is the abbreviation for Rabbi.
All right. So, first of all, Rashi explains who is Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. He says, Amora Hoya. He was an Amora. In other words, he's one of the rabbis of the Talmud in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? The Hu Hanikra Mora de Arod Eretz Yisrael. And he was given the title, the man who owns the land of Israel, in Maseches Nida. Bal Horoz Hoyo, it happened to be a man, you know, who gave, you know, people would come to him in order to find out what's the din and so on. He was a Pesach, as we would say today. Vehu Shimesh Rabbi Yochanan Achrei Moshe Shlakish. And he's the one who served Rabbi, he was like a disciple of Rabbi Yochanan after Reish Lakish passed away. And he was very, very poor. Okay? Literally, he was oppressed and poor. Okay? In other words, life was very difficult for him. So, Ovad Milsa, what does it mean, Ovad Milsa? He says, Hikison. He let some blood. All right. And then, remember what it said? He took Barod Sumo. He says, Ben Hashum. Sela Shalashum, which means literally the side of the garlic. He took a side of garlic. So maybe it means that, let's say, he took, you know, the outer part of the garlic, okay? Rather than the whole clove, so he took a piece, the outer piece of the garlic, okay? And what happened? Kolash Libe. So he explains this alpha. It means that he fainted. So then they noticed, you know, when they came to see him, that there was tzitzisa, which is tzitzisa, and tzitzisa is like a spark coming from his brow, meyapuse. And he says, b'mitzvah. So he explains so far what the words are. So then, remember, there was a conversation with the Rebbeinu Shalom, and he says to him, afterwards, kulei hai v'yefshar, bit mia, a question, all this, and maybe, so he says, kulei hai avarata, v'akati achsfeka, you did all these things and you still have doubts. Dimalay Misram Nino Bishato Dimizoine. Perhaps you would not be reborn in the time where you would have plenty of food. So then he asked the question, he says, the Chayai Nefisha or the Chiana? In other words, Yumei Chayai, the years of my life, Shecho Yisi, Kavor, that I have already lived. Heim Rabim, are they more? Are they more than what I'm, I'm destined to live? So Omar, the Chiyas, so he said, yeah, but you have lived. Ma'ashek vocha yiso, right? As much as you have already lived, is Rumi Mimashato Osid Vichyos. They're more than what you will in the future live. The Hainu de Kobochili, so this is the reason why it says that he wept. Why did he weep? He wept because he heard that he doesn't have too many more years left. Okay. Kiyoma Shchina Hochi, when the Shchina said this to him, right? The high the chiyach, and why did he laugh? He says, Mishum Yud Gimel Nahabasa Lechitzpahen, because of the 13 rivers of Afasim on which he would bathe, Ulatayel Behen, and to take a walk by their side, Bizelizer, from one to another. So another, this is why, because he was happy to know that in paradise he's going to get all these rivers of Farsimon, you know, and he'll be able to bathe in them and to stroll about and so on and so forth. So at any rate, he says to him, Ehochi, if that's the case, lo ba'ina, I don't want. Now what I don't want? So Rashi says, the Miskarik Alma, I don't want the world to be destroyed now in order to do this favor for me that, you know, I can be reborn with all these things. That's not what I want. Then he said, "V'sulo, that's it. V'chi ein aton esenli devarim achirim. Aren't you giving me anything else?" So what did he say to him? So the Rebbeinu Shlomo said to him, "Omalei, right? Or the chavroch, Maika Yehuda. So what shall I give on somebody else? Ano megabro the leisle ve'ino. I have to, you know." what Rashi is saying over here, that the next few words he says in the Sefer. My master's Talmud, I didn't have this. My teacher's Talmud didn't have it, but my Talmud, my copy of Talmud, the words occur. But at any rate, what did he ask? He did ask that, you know, give me from the share of somebody, you know, who doesn't deserve the Ilam Hab, right? So then what happened? He gave him a, as we said, a knipe, right? Where? Baskutla Apasai. It says, Hainu Tzitzisa, and that's the reason why they saw the spark over here, the Nofak Minei, which, you know, came forth from him. Shemadbik Etzbat Sreda Im Hagodol, in other words, he takes the index finger with the thumb, right? Umake Betziperna Etzba, and he hits him with the nail of the index finger. Okay, no, he hit him with it, right, which is the knife. So Rashi explains what happened over there. All right. So at any rate, you know, and then he said to him, you know, Igri Boch Yiri, Kolomar. In other words, what? Hikisi bechitzai lechedva biyalma omar kain. So the Rebbeinu Shalom said to him, okay, you like my arrows? In other words, did you like the way I hit you? And he said it because, you know, he shept nachas from Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. So that's the reason why he said it to him. As I say, it's not easy, but I mean, this is how Rashi understood it, okay? All right, so now we have another story.
We've already completed that story.
Yeah, of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. So now we have another story, okay?
We're on Ahmed Beis.
No, we're still on Ahmed Allah.
Excuse me, yeah, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Now up to Rabbi Chama bar Chanina, okay?
No, I mean, when all you right. have a little old lady grab when you're a kid, and she grabs you by the cheek to show she loves you, so why should
right,
she
right.
give you a little flick?
Right. It was a sign of love by the Rebbeinu Shalom that he gave him.
Yeah, more involved in it. My God, 12 screams of bomb. I mean, the man is looking
13.
For paradise. 13. Looking for paradise.
Don't sell paradise short.
I shouldn't be so lucky.
Of course it was a dream.
I had a dream also. One night I went to bed, and I couldn't breathe out of my nose because somebody punched me in my nose, and I, you know, the septum got caught getting smaller and smaller. God, I can't breathe. I can't breathe in here. I went to bed, and all I could think of was, you know, it's getting worse and worse. It was. Like, during the day, I couldn't breathe too much either. It was only 3 to 1. Even my nose.
Who spends time without ever dreaming, he can't be a righteous person. I mean, it's because, you know, people who were good, they're going to have it. It's a natural thing. Okay. All right, so we're up to Rabbi Chama bar Chanina. Okay, this is where we are right now. See him?
You never finished explaining about this interpretation of my arrows have struck you, my arrows. What is that?
In other words, Rabbeinu Shalom is saying to him, well, how do you like what I did to you?
Oh, you mean the
I want to show you, you know, that I enjoy it. Right, yeah, the knife, no. But this one. These are the arrows. Okay.
Is there any significance to the fact that he took the skin of a piece of garlic to go in? I mean,
he was so poor.
He was so famished.
Says
he
was
but
so
that's
poor.
When he polished
so he could take a little piece of garlic, and then this is what he ate. But obviously, he didn't agree with him. And so he fainted, and it's fainting. You know, when he fainted, he dreamt. Okay. Yeah. While he was out. Okay. He invited. So Rabbi Chama bar Chanina is the next person. Goes Atandi, so. You know, he proclaimed a fast.
Where are we, Dr. Moore?
We don't know exactly where we are.
We're on the third big line right now.
The third
thing is
from the bottom.
From the bottom.
No, the third
underneath
big line.
The Rashi. Yeah.
Right here. 7 lines from the left.
Yeah. All right. He proclaimed the fast because there was no rain, right? Nevertheless, rain didn't come in spite of the fast. So Amulei, so they said to Rabbi Chama bar Chanina, they said to him, Rabbi Yosher ben Levi goes out to Anisa v'yosemitra. Look, Rabbi Yosher ben Levi proclaimed the fast, and rain came. So Amaluhu, so he said to them, Ho Ano, Ho Balavai. He says, look, I'm who I am, and Bar Levi, right, he is who he is, okay? So Omulei, so they said to him, Dinei Nichvin Datin, look, let him come. In other words, let's invite Yoshua ben Levi to come over here, okay? And we will have kavana, and efshur the tavit zibur libayhu, and maybe congregation, their hearts will be broken, so that rain will come. So baun rachme, so they prayed, v'loyosimitra, and still rain didn't come. So Amalahu, so he said to them, Nichalahu Sheyovo Moto Bishwilenu, is it okay with you, he says, that rain should come for our sake? Omulei, they said yes. So Omar, so he said, Rokia Rokia, O sky, Kasi Panayak, cover your face. In other words, you know, cover your face with a cloud. Loir saying, didn't. Omar, he said, Kama Azim Pnei Rokia. Oh, says, how impudent is the literally the face of the heavens. In other words, the real, the tough, they refuse to listen to us. So they're behaving stubbornly. So Ichse, so when they heard that, they, in other words, they realized that they were being given a bawling out, so to speak. So they became covered, right? The Yosa Mitra, and rain came. So, okay. Levi, Gozata Nisa. Levi proclaimed the fast also. It's not the same story. It's another story, again, about proclaiming fast, and, the rain doesn't come. Okay? So he proclaimed the fast, for the Yosa Mitra, and rain didn't come. So Omar Lefono of the Beinu Shalalam, he said to the Beinu Shalalam, he says, look, Olisa v'yoshavta b'morom, you have gone up and you sit in heaven up there in the sky, and you do not have any mercy on your children. Also mitra, so rain did fall, the itla, but what happened to him? He became lame.
Lame. So paralyzed,
he wasn't able to walk straight after that. Okay, this was a punishment. Omer Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar said, "Liyolam al yatir chodim dvorim klapi malo." Says a person should never say bad things about the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. You shouldn't act, in other words, impudently towards the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and say things that you have no business saying. Sharei adam gadol hitir dvorim klapi malo, because here is a story of a great man who did that. He said words, that were not fitting, in protest against the Rabbeinu Shel Olam b'Yitla, and he became lame. Umane, who was this great man we're talking about? Levi. It's Levi. So now, the whole Gamalei wants, the Gemara wants to know, is this the reason why he became lame? The whole Levi, achvei kido kamid rabi. We have a different tradition that he became lame after he showed kido to Rebbe, how kido is performed. Now, of course, the question is, what is kido? So the answer is that in the Torah we have phrases like, for example, vayikod ho'om vayishtachavu, okay? Yeah. Or vayikdu ho'om, or something like that. So usually what we translate is, that they bowed their head. That's the way we translate it, okay? But this is not the way Levi understood it. Levi understood it in the sense that it's a form of prostration on the ground, whereby in order to get up, you have to do it not by using your hands in order to get up, to support yourself, to raise yourself, but only by the thumbs. And as a result, it put great strain on his legs, and the result was that he became lame. So in other words, another story in the Talmud tells us that he became lame as a result of trying to demonstrate to Rebbe how was the kida performed, okay? And here we just said that, it was because he said things that he had no business saying to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. So what is the answer? So the answer is, ho veho gomalei. Both of them brought about the fact that he became lame, both what he had to say and also the fact that he demonstrated kido, and it was really, in other words, he was punished when he showed kido by becoming lame. Okay. I said we usually translate kido in the sense of to bow your head. Okay, that's the way we usually translate it. Why? Because, for example, the quotation that I quoted from Parsha Shmos, okay, by Yikod Ha'om, by Yishtachavu, okay, that...
I thought you meant during the
No, because what does it say about Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur says, Kore'im u'mishtachavim. Kore'im means that you bend your knee, first you bend your knee, and then, mishtachavim, you prostrate yourself, okay? Right, okay. Yeah, and not only that, but it says for no for mal panehem also, and fall upon their face. So in other words, Korim, you bend your knee, umishtachavim, and then you stretch out, panofim al paneihim, and then you lower your face to the ground. Okay?
This is how it's done today?
This is how it should be done on Yom Kippur. Yeah. Everybody else is doing what? I see. All right. That's but that technically speaking, I mean, all right. Look, none of us know exactly to the letter. I mean, but this is the description that we have in the Mishnah for Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. These are the words that they use. So you korim, right? Umishtachavim, v'noflim al paneihem. A later version that the way we have it in the Musaf is Hoyakor Mishtachim Modim Vinoftim Al Paneihem, but that's not in the original text, the Modim. Because Modim means, you know, that they give thanks, okay? But of course, this is what we say in Olenu, you know. But after Kor Mishtachim Modim. Right, right. But he wanted to show Kido, and to him, Kido was, as I say, this special form of prostration. Not bending your head, but prostrating yourself. Pardon me?
The Hebrew word for show off.
For a show off.
Yeah.
At this particular point, I don't know. The word doesn't come to me. Okay. I don't have such people.
You know, show off.
I'll tell you. There is a word. The word is shachtsan.
Shachtsan.
Yeah. Okay. The word is shachtsan. But I don't want to like to make people show us. But that's the word.
Is there a Yiddish word for that too, for show us?
My father used to say, I show off. Okay. No, I understand. I mean, he was showing off the fact that he was able to perform a kido. That was the idea. I understand what David was driving at. If it was only to show, I mean, so that Rebbe would understand what it means, that's one thing. But if he was doing a pocket in the sense of, you know, he wanted to show off how he could do it, you see, so in that case, then he was punished by becoming lame. Okay? All right. Yeah. Rabbi Chiya bar Lulyane Shaminu Lahana Chanoni. So Rabbi Chiya bar Lulyane says he heard clouds, the Ka'amre, that they were saying, Nesu v'nesvi maya ba'amonimov. Let's go and pour water down on Amonimov. Let's go and bring rain to Amonimov. So Omar Lefono, so he said, Rabbeinu Shalalam said, K'nishat the Torah liyam cho Yisrael. When you gave Torah, when you gave the Torah to your people Israel, Chozartu al kol umeis ha'olam lo kibluha. You went to various nations, right? You went to all the other nations, and they refused to accept it. The Yachshav atu nasein lahem motor. Now you're giving them rain. So as a result, Shadu hacha, pour down over here. So Shor yuho aduchte. This is what happened. So the rain came down on Eretz Israel, and not on Amon. Okay. Dora Shabi Chir Balunyane, and now he looked for a pasuk in order to confirm, this business. So he says, "My dechsev, what is the meaning of Sadi Katoma Yifroch Kires Babonin Yiske?" He says, "What is the meaning of the pasuk which says the righteous will flourish like a palm tree, right? He will grow tall like a cedar in Lebanon." I'm translating it very, very poetically, okay? But as you realize, in the very same pasuk, what is the righteous compared to? It's compared to both a date palm, right? And a cedar tree, right? So he says, I don't understand why the two trees, in the same verse. Imnemar, if it is written Tamar, the date palm, so Lomanemar Erez, then in that case, what do we need? The cedar. Imnemar Erez, and if the pasuk simply said cedar, so Lomanemar Tamar, then what do we need? The date palm. Why does he have to be compared to both of these trees? So he explains. It's a drasha. Okay. says Ilu Ne'emar Tomor, if it said only date palm, Velo Ne'emar Erez, did not say Erez, right, the cedar, then Hoyis Yoimer, I would say Ma Tomor, just as in the case of the palm tree in Gizomachlif, if you cut it down, he says, then in that particular case, its stock, whatever remains, is not going to give forth new shoots. So af tzadik, so the same thing is going to happen to a tzadik, chas v'sholom, en gizu machlif, it would to say that the tzadik is not going to have any new shoots coming from him. In other words, you know, he won't have children or something like that, you know, or talmidim. So l'chach ne'emar, this is the reason why it says eretz, he's compared to the cedar. In other words, because the cedar will not suffer that fate. The cedar will always give forth new shoots. Now, Ilu Ne'emar Erez, if it only said cedar, Velo Ne'emar Tamar, and it didn't say palm tree, then Hayisi Yomer, I would say, Ma Erez Einosa Peiros, Hatzadik Chas V'Sholom Einosa Peiros, just as the cedar will not have any fruit, does not give forth fruit. So would we say that the tzadik, God forbid, will not bring forth any fruit? So the Chach Ne'emar, for this reason, it's written Tamar. Okay? And that's the reason why he's compared both to the cedar and to the date palm. In other words, that he will have new shoots and he will also give forth fruit. Okay? So, the Chach Ne'emar Tamar, V'Ne'emar Erez. Right. And this is the reason why it says both Tamar and also Erez. Right? Both palm and cedar. So now they ask the question, the Erez Gizim Achliv, and tell me, it says, does the cypress, does the cedar, Leikeach Ilon Mechadero, if a person buys a tree from his fellow man, right? Lokutz, and he buys it in order to cut it down. In other words, he wants to use it for firewood or whatever it may be, then he is obliged, what? Magbiho min akarka tefach. He still has to, where he cuts it off, it must be from the ground a handbreadth. In other words, you have to leave a handbreadth on the ground. So where do you lift it off? In other words, where do you cut it off? Where do you sew it off? You know, when it's a tefach from the ground. So why? Because obviously you want to try to leave enough of the tree that it might regenerate itself subsequently. Okay? So, yes, Magbiyam in Akarka, Tefach, right, the Kotzeitz. And then he cuts it down. Now, Besedan Hashikma, this is a certain type of a sycamore tree. So, with this type of a sycamore tree, it says Shnei Tefachim. Then you have to leave two hand breaths from the ground. Bivisulas Hashikma, if it is a virgin sycamore tree, Shloisha Tefachim. Then you have to leave three tefachim from the ground when you cut it. Bekonim uvigafanim, if it is with reeds or with vines, ben min hapakak ulamala. Where do you cut the vine or the reed? It has to be from where is the first, literally cork, but it means like a knot in this particular case. You have to cut above the knot. And if you've ever done any pruning of vines, you'll know. My wife is an expert on that. You cut the vine down to practically nothing, and before you know it, at the end of the summer, it's all covered with leaves, and hopefully with grapes. It doesn't happen that well. Squirrels get to them beforehand. Okay. But at any rate, you know, you have to know where to do the cutting. Okay. You cut too low, and that's it. That kills it off. But if you cut, you know, the right way, you cut the leaf just above, let's say, you know, you make your cut in the right place, above this knot, then in that case, it will continue to grow. Bidikolim of Arazim, and now this is what's pertinent, he says, when it comes to palm trees, you know, date palms, right? Or the Arazim or cedars, then what you have to do is Chofer Lamato Umashrish. Then you have to dig below, and you have to make roots, or maybe it means uproot, but they have to do it lefishein gizem achlif, because it's not going to give forth any new shoots. Okay, So, of course, this is a contradiction to what we said before. What did we say before about the cedar?
Yeah,
we said, it's going to have, and here it says it's not going to have shoots, right? So the Gemara says, Hocha b'maya skinan, so what are we dealing with over here? He says, B'shoa b'naya rozin. We're talking only about other types of cedar trees. Kida Rabba Bar Huna, even as Rabba Huna thought, the Yomar Rabba Bar Huna, when he said, Asoro minaya rozin heim. He says, there are 10 different kinds of cedars. Okay? Shenemar, as the Pasuk says in Yeshayahu, it says over there, Etain Babidbo Erez Shita Vahadas. The trouble is that we don't have the rest of the quotation over here. Okay. But he mentions over there, I will give in the wilderness or in the desert, he says, I will give cedars, cassia trees, myrtle trees, and so on and so forth. And apparently these are all considered like allied to the arosim, to the cedars. So, So, while it may apply to one type of eras, it doesn't necessarily apply to other types of eras, is the point that he's trying to say. And so, therefore, when we say gizom machlif, right, in other words, it will bring forth new shoots, this applies to the other types of trees enumerated by Yeshayahu, but not necessarily to the one that we're talking about. We were talking about that you have to dig a hole, and if you're going to try to make new roots or something like that. Okay, I think we'll stop at this particular point. As you can see, we're in hailing distance next week, Amitz Hashem, to finish this chapter.
The word Shikma is just the way of
sycamore.
Sort of the same word.
Right. Very close. Yeah, very close.
So we're on Ahmed.
We're on Chof Hei,
Ahmed
Beis right now, right.
What's the conclusion?
I had several stories about all the rabbis, who they proclaimed the Tainus, and the rain didn't come, And, they felt very bad about it. So, there are two different stories that we had over there. For example, we had the story about Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, where he proclaimed Reb Chana Bar Chanina. He proclaimed one and it didn't rain. So they said to him, didn't Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi do it? And the rain came. So he said, I'm not the son of Levi, in other words, he said, look, point is, he says that maybe I wasn't, that the generation is not worthy or something like that. And so, besides which, we learned that Levi was punished. All right. But why was he punished? He was punished because he said things that the Rebbeinu Shalom had no business saying.
Okay. Even though it did rain.
Right.
For him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then we had other stories too.
All right. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. As for example, a very nice story. We read a story about a certain Rabbi Chia Bar Yonah. He said that he heard clouds that were conversing with each other. They said, "Let's rain upon Ammon and Moab." So he prayed to Rabbeinu Shalom and he said, "Look, when the time came to give Torah to the people of Israel, Ammon and Moab and all the other nations, they refuse to do it, right? So, who deserves the rain?" So the answer is Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the rain came to Eretz Yisrael, and before it came
story.
To other places, right?
Beautiful. Yes.
And then we learned, that was 2 weeks ago, that business. Then we had the business about why do we say Tzadikat Tama Yifroch and so on, if you remember.
Right.
And the reason in the Kiyaris Bavono, what is the connection between the Tamar, the date palm, and the Eres, the cedar. So the answer is that just as we may think, that Ein Gizem Machlif, in other words, that once you cut it down, it will no longer give forth shoot, so therefore this is the reason why we learn that it's katamar, because that will continue to give fruit. And why not, why the errors? So the answer is, we may think, you know, that just as the Eretz has no fruit of its own, so the Tzaddik won't. So that's the reason why we have the other one, you know, in order to show us that whatever the Tzaddik produces is going to have fruit and so on, right. And then, we've learned the story about Rabbi Eliezer. He proclaimed 13 different fasts. We learned, you know, if it doesn't rain, you have a whole series.
Going,
yeah. And it didn't rain. And when the people started to leave over there, he said, did you prepare your graves already? In other words, the implication being, since there's no rain, you're going to die. So have you already taken care, you know, of your funeral arrangements and so on? So when they heard that, then they began crying and so on. And at that point, then rain came. In other words, the people had to feel themselves, you know, that
they wanted
the
rain.
Right, that they needed the rain, and that, you know, without rain, they would die and so on. Once they got that feeling, so then it happened. Okay. Then we read another story about Rabbi Eliezer. He said all the additional brachas, you know, that you had to on the fast day that we learned, and still it didn't rain. And Rabbi Akiva got up and he said, Ovinu Malkeinu, and with that, it started to rain. So, it was said, it's not because Rabbi Akiva was a greater scholar than Rabbi Eliezer, but what was the difference? That Rabbi Eliezer would never forgive slights. He was not of the forgiving nature. Whereas Rabbi Akiva is Ma'ir al Midoysaf. And the same thing, we come to Lubeinu Shalom, we don't want him to be stubborn. No. We want him also, you know, to forgive our wrongs and so on. So we had a lot of things that we learned over there.
This is Eliezer ben Hyrcanus?
Yeah. Whenever it says Rabbi Eliezer Stam, then it's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Right. Correct. Okay. And then the very last thing that we learned, we learned about the question about Shivcho Shel Tzibor. In other words, what is the glory of the congregation? How do we know, in other words, that it, because of the merit of the congregation? So, is it because, you know, rain is going to come? No. The answer is, according to Rabbi Akiva, the sign is that if you say Masha Baruach, and a strong wind blows, and then you say Merd Agashem in the rain, then we know that's because the congregation itself is worthy. Alright, so these are some of the things.
Okay,
and then the very last item that we had was about the recital of the Halil HaGadol. Should it be done on an empty stomach, or should it be done on a full stomach, right? If it's done on a full stomach, then of course it means that the people are very happy, and this would be in line with the Psalms upon which it's based. Namely, who knows in Lech Mochoboso, Kilion Chasta, the Rabbeinu Shalom is the one who supplies food for everyone. So, therefore, this would be the recommended procedure, right? Because remember, he said that if it started in terrain before, before noon, so they should go home, they should eat, and then afterwards they recite the Halal HaGodo. So they brought the example of one of the shuls in Mechuzah, where punkt fakert, in other words, rain came, they started to say the Halal HaGodo, and then after that they first went home. So they say, Sleitch, how can you reconcile that?
Yeah.
So the answer is, over there, these guys were, they like to drink a lot with their meals. And because they want to drink a lot, so if you tell them, okay, go home and eat and drink, they're liable to forget to come back again in order to recite the Halal HaGodo. Huh? We're not pointing any fingers. What do you want?
I'm only kidding.
For Brangen. I learned a word or two. For Brangen.
For Brangen, right.
For Brangen, yeah.
Yeah.
They like to lift the glass once in a while.
Well, listen. Especially straight vodka, straight bourbon, you know. Chosse drink straight.
Chosse, don't mix it in.
Nah, of course not. Cocktails are not for Hasidim. Okay, so now we're ready to begin the parak. Okay. Mishnah says, by the way, The entire page over here is devoted to the Mishnah, as you can see.
Wow.
Well, we've had that before, where they bring the entire Mishnah for the entire Perek at the beginning, and then after that, you know, they discuss it piece by piece and so on, okay? So this is what happens over here in this Perek. So we're going to have a little boost, you know, from Rashi and the others and so on and so forth in order to understand. Okay. So the Mishnah begins by saying, "Bishloisha prokim bashano kohanim nosim es kapehem arba piyamim bayoyim b'shachris b'busav b'mincha b'nos she'orem." Okay. So there are three different types of occasions. This is the way I have to translate it over here, because it doesn't mean 3 days during the year. Obviously, it's more than 3 days.
Three
but
occasions.
As we'll see, right, there are three different types of occasions when we do it. And what are these three? That the Kohanim have to go to Duchen, in other words, they have to raise their hands in blessing to the people, they have to Duchen 4 times during the course of the day. They have to Duchen to Shachris, they have to Duchen at Busav time, they have to Duchen at Mincha, and they have to Duchen also at Ne'ilah time. And notice that the correct name of Ne'ilah is really Ne'ilah Shorim, which means the closing of the gates, because the word Ne'ilah itself means closing up, okay? And Manul in Hebrew, for example, is a lock, okay? So it's a time when the gates are going to be closed. All right, so let's take a look first of all at Rashi.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. There are three different occasions. We didn't yet have what the occasions are, but we'll have them in a moment. But first of all, he's going to define what do we mean by Ne'ilah Shorim? Why do we call it the time of the closing of the gates? Okay.
Give you one.
The first one, he says, B'shloisha prakim b'musav. So he says before Ishra Gemara. The Gemara is going to explain this, because I have to tell you, there's obviously going to be some contradictions over there, okay, that we have to iron out. But what do we mean by Ne'ilah Shorim? This is what Rashi addresses himself to. So the answer is, he says, Meforesh bebrochos Yerushalmi. In the Yerushalmi Gemara brochos, in other words, not in our Bavli, you know, the one that we learned, but in the Yerushalmi, Beferek Tfilas HaShachar in Mosai. Ne'mosai Ne'ilah, when is Ne'ilah? That's the question that Yerushalmi asked. So he says, Yeshomrim Ne'ilah Sharei Mikdosh. There are those who say that it refers to the closing of the gates of the Beis HaMikdosh. In other words, when it came to this time, they would lock up the Beis HaMikdosh, and, you know, so that in order to secure it, so that people wouldn't, let's say, wouldn't come and break in at night, okay? The Yeshomrim, and there are those who say that it's Ne'ilah Sharei Shamayim, that we're referring to the time when the gates of heaven are being closed, shenoalin osam li eserev bigmar tefila, because they would lock them up, or they would close them up, if you wish, in the evening time after the prayers were finished. V'nohagim hoyal hispalel tefilas ne'ilah b'chol tanisa. And now Rashi adds that they were in the custom that whenever they had a public fast. Now, here he doesn't mean, you know, like, for example, let's say Tisha B'Av or Shavuot Sabbatamis and so on, because we'll see that, you know, those are, you know, days of mourning. We fast because we mourn on those days. But when they had these special days that they proclaimed because of rain, or maybe for some other tzara, whatever it may be, but particularly, you know, we're talking about, you know, when there was a scarcity of rain, so in that case, they would add an additional ne'ilah, the chol tanisim, and all their fasts, k'derech shemispalalim b'yom kippurim, just as when we daven on Yom Kippur, we have a ne'ilah. So of course, getting back to Yom Kippur, there we know, we're familiar with ne'ilah. But we're never familiar, we've never had any occasion in our own experience to have ne'ilah on any of the other days. So naturally, the reason why is because this was during the time that the Beis HaMikdash was still in existence. But, you know, since the Beis HaMikdash is no longer in existence, so only on Yom Kippur do we still have a Ne'ilah service. However, it's going to affect, in general, the principle about Duchening. All right. As you know, here in the Golot, English translation of diaspora, okay?
I think we all know that.
Okay, good. Here, our custom is that we only duchen on festivals, okay? Those are the only times that we have duchening. And if there's a festival that falls on Shabbos, then as we know, there's a question as to whether the Kohanim go up to duchen or not. In those shuls where the custom is to go up to duchen, they duchen, even on Shabbos, if it's a yontif, right? But in those shuls, like in Kadima, for example, where the custom never developed that the Kohen goes up to duchen on Shabbos, so they don't duchen on those days. And that's the difference of custom depending upon where you daven, okay? Now, for example, in the Young Israel, where my son davens on Yontif, they duchen, even if it's the Shabbos. That's the custom, okay? In Eretz Yisrael, however, they have a different business over there. This is going to be more in line with what do they do in Eretz Yisrael as far as duchening is concerned. Yes?
I know in Yerushalayim they duchen everything.
That is correct. Okay? With the exception of when?
Exception, I don't know.
Exception would be Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av.
Right. Now, in some of the other Tadith, Tzibur, we're going to see that there is some difference of opinion also as to whether they duchen in Mincha or they don't duchen in Mincha. That we'll see when we get to it.
Mincha?
Okay? In Mincha time. Anatan is Tzibur, not ordinarily.
Yeah, I understand.
Right? Not ordinarily. And of course, you understand the reason why. Reason being that a Kohen, when he goes up to Duchen, he must not be in a state of intoxication. It's written in the Torah, Yain v'sheichor, al teish tato v'yaron, you know, that the God said to Aaron, that you and your children together with you, you are prohibited from drinking wine or any kind of strong, or in other words, intoxicating beverages, you know, when you go and serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And of course, Nesias Kapayim is a form of avodah. There's no question about it. But the Kohen has the mitzvah of doing it. It's a big mitzvah. Unfortunately, we have Kohanim today who, you know, they neglect the mitzvah going up to Duchen. Baba didn't say no harabin. You know why?
Not Shabbos. Shabbos.
Yeah, right, exactly. They feel that since they're not Shabbos, Shabbos, right, they're not worthy enough to go up to blench the people. But technically, from the point of view of Din, they are, they still have this obligation to go up, but they're not doing it, that's all. All right. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, however, every day they duchen to Shachris, and they also duchen on those days in which we have Musaf. So the question is only now about what do they do in Eretz Yisrael as far as Yom Kippur is concerned.
They don't duchen. They do it in all places in Eretz Yisrael, or just in Yerushalayim?
Yerushalayim definitely is the minhag, and in areas around Yerushalayim it's also the minhag to duchen every day. Okay. Difference is that in Tel Aviv, for some reason or other, it developed that only on Shabbos and Yom Tov did they do it.
I mean, that they don't also maybe a place where they won't do it.
Yeah, probably Haifa too.
German
Jews
didn't right. do that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, why? It's a good question, why. The only excuse that they have is really the excuse of Tircha D'Tzibura. In other words, not to place an additional burden on people, particularly, let's say, on a weekday, you know, when people are on the rush. They daven 1, 2, 3 and they go off to work. And of course, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, they work very, very early. I mean, in Eretz Yisrael, at 6:30, everybody's already on their way to work, you know. Yeah. And places open up at 7, 8 o'clock is already banker's hours in Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
They'll open up, yeah. Yeah. Well, this is what it is.
When do they go to lunch?
Well, they take make? Lunch, let's say, between 12 and 1 or something like that, that time, yeah.
Really, you know, yeah. they do it so well there. They go through it in 2 minutes, 2-3 minutes.
Yeah, you have to realize too, they don't do the Rabbeinu Shalalims, you know, that we learned about when we learned the Gemara.
Yeah,
prophets.
About the Cholam.
They don't do
it about the, yeah.
Yeah, but
the and so on.
Yeah, right, exactly. That they don't do. Okay. So, you know.
Actually, are you obligated to say, you're not really obligated to say all those supplementary.
No. All that you do, you must listen to the Kohen as he blesses you, and you have to say Amen at the end of each of the psukim.
So that's what they probably do.
So that's what they did, that's right.
Fast.
So.
Nice. Yeah. Ceremonious, but fast. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll discuss this a little bit later when we get into the machlokes, you know, the difference of opinion as to about mincha particularly. But as I said, the basic reason why they don't do it later in the day is because the kohen, you know, must not be intoxicated. On an ordinary day, it's assumed that a kohen is going to go home after the davening. And, you know, he'll eat, he'll drink, and so on and so forth. They don't want to put any additional restrictions on the kohen, right? Okay? So that's the reason why they don't duchen during mincha. But the only time so far that we have the experience of, you know, a ne'ilah is on Yom Kippur, right? We don't know of any other time. The Mishnah will mention a couple of other occasions when. But with us, you know, we only have this experience on Yom Kippur. Well, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen has not eaten or drunk anything, you know, during the course of the day, so that he still is in a state of readiness in order to pronounce the blessing upon the Eilim. In Eretz Yisrael, however, we'll discover that they don't say, they don't do to Mincha. Why? Because this is an opinion that we have that we'll discuss when we get to it. Okay. All right, so much for the first few lines over there. All right, now the Mishnah continues to tell us what are the three different periods, okay? It's Betanios, in other words, the special fast days that have been proclaimed, that they have what? The possibility, I'd say theoretically, of Shacharis, Musaf, Mincha, and Nila, right? Mm-hmm. But we'll discover that it's not 100%. Uvama'amodos, and also when the people have to gather, you know, for the Ma'amod. In other words, as we said, Eretz Yisrael is divided into 24 different areas, and you know, rotation system was assigned, and we'll have that a little bit further in the Mishnah in just a few moments. Okay, Uvi Yom HaKippurim, and of course on Yom Kippur, that we know. All right. So now the Mishnah continues to say, Elohein Ma'amodos. These are the Ma'amodos. Now, what does it mean, these are the Ma'amodos? What it really means over here is this is the reason why they had Ma'amodos. Lefishanem are, inasmuch as the Torah says, Tzav es b'nei Yisrael, that, you know what, you are to command the children of Israel and say to them, es korboni lachmi liyishai, that you have to burn my sacrifice, right? It's to be, you know, my literally lachmi means like my food and so on, but of course it doesn't mean Rebbeinu Shalom needs food, but it means that the Rebbeinu Shalom, you know, wants the people of Israel to sacrifice to him. And of course, what do we learn further over there? When do we have, you know, what does this apply to? The answer is every morning, right? It's like Hakevesachotasev Aboker, and then the Esakevesachenitasev in Haboim. You are to sacrifice a lamb in the morning, and then you are to sacrifice a lamb bein ha'boyim, literally, you know, as it gets dark, in other words, in the afternoon, okay? And then, what does it refer to? It refers to it as olas tamid, right? This is a continual sacrifice, ha'suya b'har Sinai, which, you know, was proclaimed on Mount Sinai, okay? So, that being the case, we know that the people of Israel were commanded to bring sacrifices, right? Mm-hmm. All right. Now, in addition, we also have, in connection with the various sacrifices, that we have part of the sacrifice consists of the action called smicha. What do we mean by smicha over here? Here it doesn't have anything to do with rabbinical degrees, but it means, you know, v'somach yodo al rosh ha'olah, that you have to place your hands upon the animal which is being sacrificed, okay? And here, you know, the Talmud, you know, discussing business of sacrifices, you know, applies it. Of course, it could apply to the Kohen when he has to. If it is a a sacrifice that only the Kohen is commanded to bring, and there are such things. As for example, we know that the Avodah of Yom Kippur, right? At that time, the Kohen Gadol has different animals that he has to bring as sacrifices, okay? He has to bring a par, he has to bring a year, you know, a he-goat, and so on, you know, for different purposes. And these are his sacrifices. So naturally, when he sacrifices, he has to put his hands on the animal before, you know, slaughtering the animal, right? And, you know, and following that, of course, is the sprinkling of the blood and so on. All right. But we find from other passages in Vayikra that smicha would also be done by whom? By the non-Kohen. When he brings his own private animal to sacrifice, let's say he's bringing Korban Todah or Korban Shlomim, whatever it may be, you know, that he brings. So in that particular case also, as he brings it, you know, to the Beis HaMikdash to be, you know, before it should be slaughtered, sacrificed, you know, and the blood sprinkled on the altar, so he has to place his hands upon it, and he leans upon it with all his bodily force, so to speak, you see. So this is smicha, okay?
But he doesn't do the actual sacrificing.
No. Actually, the din is that shechita k'shera b'zor, which means that even a non-priest, if he sacrifices, the sacrifice is valid. But nevertheless, we don't find it's a general rule that a non-priest, you know, that a zor will sacrifice it. But certainly, as far as the smicha part, there's no question, you know, that they put their hands upon the sacrifice. So,
and Kohanim don't do the shechita most of the time, do they? So Levayim, Levim?
No, the Kohanim.
Kohanim,
oh sure, sure.
They did all the slaughtering.
Busy playing, playing music.
Levayim, right? They were busy playing
music,
right.
singing,
exactly. Okay. So that was their job. Right. Okay.
Washing the feet of the Kohanim, the hands, and bringing out the clothes.
Well, actually, the Kohen could wash his own hands and feet. You know why? Because the Beis HaMikdash, they had a very ingenious contraption, particularly in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, that they had, even in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, you had the kiyor, which means, you know, the basin. And of course, the basin had spigots. Okay. But in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, they already had a contraption that they called a muchnig. It's like the word bishin, you know. Because it's like the Greek letter chi, right? So that and in English the chi always appears as a ch in words. So machine and muchta actually related words to each other. I had something last night about trying to seek, what was the original language. Bailey, there are all kinds of theories.
Oh, I wanted to watch that.
But
no, he's telling
me. Why didn't you remind me yesterday?
Right, but there's no question, you know, that there are words that are either similar in one language to another, or else there are words that are borrowed from one language to another. The language of the Mishnah has many Greek and Latin words in it. I was learning yesterday for myself a very, very difficult Mishnah. Caleb, which deals with all kinds, Caleb, right, deals with all kinds of implements, tools, household tools, and other kinds of tools, and everything else, and vessels, you know, that you use for cooking, and cleaning, and everything else. And, you know, when would they be susceptible to tumah? And there are words over there which, you know, are very, very difficult, unless you have some basic idea in Latin or Greek and so on to understand what the words are. So, at any rate, getting back over here.
What kind of machine did they have? You started.
Yeah, I started to say, right. They invented a machine whereby you could turn the spigots on, and it washed not only the hands, but the spigots washed the feet at the same time.
I see.
So that they could wash the hands and feet of the Kohanim, you know, that they went over, that they washed themselves over there. And the remarkable thing about it is that it was hooked in to the stream of the Shiloah, which is you know, a stream in Yerushalayim down at the bottom of the Har HaBayis. And they were able to bring the water in into the Beis HaMikdash itself, so that they wouldn't have to go take buckets and you know, bring it up that way. So this was a remarkable thing.
Aren't you supposed to, when you wash your hands, lift the water yourself? Or have something? Isn't it supposed to be lifted by hand? Or is that when you're washing your hands?
Okay, when we wash our hands, you're correct, that we have to use a keli, as we would say. In other words, it requires, the technical expression is koach gavra. Koach gavra means that you have to use human force in order to wash your hands. Now, what's human force? In other words, you can't stick your hands, let's say,
into a stream,
or you can't stick your hands underneath a spigot of water, faucet of water. You can't do it. You have to have a keli, because you have to have this koach gavra in order to be able to be yotzei.
But the kohanim didn't have to when they were washing.
No, because the kiyor already took care of that. Okay, so you can't compare what applies to us as a noble rule and you know, the actual avoda itself in the Beis HaMikdash, because that was, as we would say, since I'm mentioning Latin, it was sui generis. In other words, it had its own rules and regulations, okay? And you can't compare it to, you know, in every respect to other things, okay? All right. Now, so here we have the problem, right? And that's what they say. How can you have a person bring a korban, right, and it's going to be sacrificed, and he's not standing right next to it? So how are you going to get all the Yidden in order to come and stand in the Beis HaMikdash at the time when the sacrifice was being performed on their behalf? Because remember, the Tamid was for all Israel. And the same thing, of course, would apply to the Musafim. What do I mean by the Musafim? I mean the additional sacrifices that they would bring on Shabbos and on the various Yomim Tovim. You know, on Shabbos it says, Yom HaShabbos, Nechvasim, Neishon, Tamimim, so on, right? And then for the holidays, they always have many more animals that were required. Sukkot required the most of all of them, because you had all kinds of sacrifices over there. Okay. So, since you couldn't have everybody standing in the Beis HaMikdash at the time of the sacrifice, so his kinu neviim mishaynim esem yabo mishmoros alkol. So the early prophets ordained, or they set up, so to speak, 24 different mishmoros, 24 watches, literally. Okay, and now call mishmor for every single mishmor. Hayam Ma'amad B'Yerushalayim, then you would have standing in Yerushalayim, literally. That's why they call it Ma'amados, because it's from the word Omeid, right? You would have Kohanim, Shel Kohanim, Shel Leviim, Shel Yisraelim. Okay? Now, how it's going to be, okay, this is what the Mishnah is going to discuss now, and we'll supplement it, of course, with Rashi as well. Okay. Higiyaz Mana Mishmol Alos. What happened when the time came for this particular mishmor to go up to the Beis HaMikdash and serve in Yerushalayim? By the way, we learned previously that each one was assigned a week, if you remember. Okay?
Yes.
And they did it in rotation. So, Kohanim u'Leviim olim Yerushalayim, then the Kohanim and the Leviim go up to Yerushalayim. The Yisrael shebe'osam mishmor miskansen l'arehen. And the Israelites who belonged to that particular mishmor, they would gather in their own cities, the Korim of Masi Bereshis, and they would read in the Torah the first chapter, Masi Bereshis. What they would read, we'll read in a few moments. Okay, but we're going to discover. All right, let's take a look at the Rashi. Okay, you see what it says Yuma over there on the side. Then it says Elohim Amodos. Okay.
Right.
All right, in other words, it's discussed also in the Gemara Yuma, which deals particularly with, you know, the laws of Yom Kippur. But, you know, here, these are the Ma'amadosh. He says, Hamis Anin Mispaladim Borehim. Those people who are fasting, they would pray in their own cities. Now, why does he say those people who were fasting? Because, as we'll discover, that during the course of the Mishmar, during the week that they had to, you know, that it was their turn, certain days they had to fast. So he says on those days, right, those who were fasting would pray in their cities, sheyiskabil berotzen korban acheihem, that the sacrifice that their brothers were officiating at would be, you know, should be accepted by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, willingly, okay, gladly, whatever you want. Okay, Kiddush Kamonis will learn a little bit further on. All right, then he continues and he says, "The fish and Emar Tzavus Na Yisrael Shehat Tomid Bo Min Hashkolim Shall Call Yisrael." The Tomid came from the Shkolim that were donated by every single Israelite. In other words, this wasn't, you know, it. If you remember, in the Torah they have different types of donations that were given, but subsequently one of them was the shekel, you know, or the machzis shekel to be more exact, the half a shekel that every Jewish male who was, let's say, 20 years and older, right, gave to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, and as long as the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, every male would do so, and even people outside of Eretz Yisrael would send their Shkolim also to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so the Tamid, in other words, the daily, the perpetual sacrifice, this came from the Shkolim that was contributed by every. By, obviously, we had learned at one time there's a machlokes between the Tzedukim and the Prushim. Remember, one of the things, the point of a difference between them was in reference to, can the Tamid come from a private sacrifice? If John Doe wants to donate an oilah for the Tamid, is it acceptable? So the Tzedukim held yes, but the Prushim said no, it has to be purchased from the communal funds that come from the Matzis Hashem. Right. Okay? Because, exactly, it represents the entire people, and therefore it cannot be private something family. Donated by a private individual. Okay, so the Rashi continues and he says, okay, inasmuch as these sacrifices came from the Shkolim donated by everybody, v'efshar, and it's impossible, he says, Shehu kol Yisrael omnim al gabi kamonim, that, you know, all Israel would be standing next to the korban that they were bringing. So uminu ma'amodos l'yosbim kamon. Therefore, they appointed these ma'amodos that they should be in their place. Now, of course, the question is only, what does it mean to be in their place? The question is really, did Yisraelim, were they confined only to their place, you know, their own local area where they had to gather in the synagogues? Or were there Yisraelim of the Mishmar who also were present in the Beis HaMikdash? There are two different points of view, okay? But the Rambam seems to be inclined that there were people who, let's say, the Mishmar, they were either visiting Yerushalayim or close by and so on, so they would come and represent their particular Mishmar, not just the Kohanim and Levim, okay? All right. At any rate, who were the Nevi'im Rishonim who ordained that we should have, you know, these Mishmaros? So he says, yes.
With the people from the Mishmar, the Yisraelim,
yeah,
if they were there only 2 weeks of the year, does that count as being a whole people? Or would they have to be there every day for it to count as the whole people?
No, I don't understand your question. If they're there during, you mean the 7 days that
the Tamid is there supposed to be for the whole people?
Yes.
Does that mean that someone from the Mishmar has to be at the temple all year round, or just
no?
So that even though they're only there 2 weeks out of the year, that's
it counts,
that qualifies
them
as
then,
the whole,
you know,
people.
The next rotation takes over and so on. As long
okay,
as,
so it's still
yeah,
the whole. It's not
exactly
one person from it,
right? Because okay, whichever Mishmar is there, they are representative of the
all
entire people.
Okay.
That's all.
So it's not all at once.
Yeah.
Okay, so during the year, the whole people appear. Okay.
Correct.
But even if it's their Mishmar is there, it could be that Mishmar that comes from that district.
Yeah.
But they are still representing all the people, not that one district.
Of course.
Yeah.
They are they represent the entire people of Israel. There's no question. Just that they were given the assignment that particular week, that they are the official representatives for that week.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Now, it says over here that it was ordained by the Nevi'im Rishonim. So the question is, who are the Nevi'im Rishonim? Okay? So Rashi explains that by Nevi'im Rishonim we mean Shmuel v'David. And he says, B'gemara Mefarish, Gemara will explain further, you know, why it was those two, you know, Shmuel and King David, you know, who ordained this, okay? You realize that when we speak about, let's say, the division of the Tanakh into the various books, okay? Mm-hmm. So we know, what does Tanakh stand for? Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, right? Okay. So, Nevi'im. Nevi'im takes in everything beginning with the book of Yehoshua right through the end of the book of Malachi. Okay? So, what do? We make a distinction and we say that you have Nevi'im Rishonim and then you have Nevi'im Achronim. What is Nevi'im Rishonim? The answer is the people who are spoken about in the book of Yehoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Beis, and then, of course, you know, Malachim Aleph, Malachim Beis. But particularly, you know, the emphasis would be upon those Nevi'im who are mentioned, as we see over here, in Shmuel and Malachim, okay? But nevertheless, the entire Nevi'im Rishonim starts from the book of Joshua and goes through the end of Malachim Beis. Mm-hmm. How about Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, and those that we call the Treyosu, in other words, Amos, Micha, Avadya, Tzfanya, etc., etc., Zechariah, you know, you name them, 12 of them, right? So they are called the Nevi'im Achronim, okay? And then, of course, who are among the very last of the Nevi'im Achronim? The answer is you have Zechariah, Haggai, and Malachi. Those were the last of the Nevi'im Achronim because they came back from Babylonian exile to Eretz Israel. And they had a hand in the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash and the rebuilding of the Eretz Israel. So those are the last of the Nevi'im Achronim, and they also are like the transition between them and also the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Okay? In other words, they were also members of this Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. All right. So, to continue over here. Okay.
We're back into the text.
No, we can still continue with the Rashi. Okay? Yeah. Rashi continues and he says, I'll call Mishmar for every watch, right?
Yeah.
So Arbov Yisrim Mishmaro Shel Kohanim Hoyu, right? There are 24 different watches of Kohanim. Ushmuel V'David Tiknu. This is what he already said before, but he's going into a greater length, right? And then he says, V'al kol Mishmar for every one of these Mishmar Hoyom Ha'amod B'Yushalayim Shekvuyin B'Omdim Bo'ir. He says, each Mishmar, according to Rashi, they had, you know, their, so to speak, like a permanent representative in Yerushalayim, who stayed in the city. At least that's one way to understand the Rashi. Maybe Rashi didn't mean quite that. Maybe what he meant was simply that they were those who were appointed, you know, who were given the fixed assignment that they should be in the city during the time, okay? But at any rate, they are in Yerushalayim, v'yomdin al korban acheihem, right? And they stand by when the sacrifice is being brought by their brothers. Ulavad elu hadoim v'Yerushalayim, and besides those who were already living in Yerushalayim, hayu ma'amodos b'chol ir, there were ma'amodos in every city, she'Yisrael nechtaku l'chov dalet ma'amodos. Because the Israelites were divided into 24 ma'amodos, keneged arbov yesu mishmoros, to correspond to the 24 mishmoros. So in other words, technically, the mishmor consists of whom? Of Kohanim, right? Mm-hmm. Assisted, of course, by Levim. Okay. Whereas the ma'amodos, they would consist of Israel. Right. Okay. And he says, "Kedatanya beberaisa shalmem tesbidos." So there is a certain beraisa that discusses it. The hainu ditnan, and therefore, this is what the Mishnah says when it says, "Hoya ma'amod b'Yerushalayim, Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisrael." That there was a ma'amod in Yerushalayim consisting of Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisrael. So the word Ma'amod over here, in other words, now takes in everybody, the Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim, who were